Translation. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, after Garga Muni, having instructed Nanda Maharaj about Krishna, departed for his own home. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, after Garga Muni, having instructed Nanda Maharaj about Krishna, departed for his own home, Nanda Maharaj was very pleased and considered himself full of all good fortune. Please repeat. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, after Garga Muni, having instructed Nanda Maharaj about Krishna, departed for his own home, Nanda Maharaj was very pleased and considered himself full of all good fortune. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Krishna is the super soul, and Nanda Maharaj is the individual soul. By the instructions of Garga Muni, both of them were blessed. Nanda Maharaj was thinking of Krishna's safety from the hands of demons like Putana and Sakatashara. And because he possessed such a son, he thought of himself as most fortunate. Om Gyana Dimarandasya Gyujanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umlitam Jaina Tasme Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this particular chapter is it's all about the point where Garga Muni comes to meet Nanda Maharaj and has been recommended by Vasudev to come and meet Nanda Maharaj, and he performs the name-giving ceremony for Krishna. Obviously, it's that particular point where he warns Nanda Maharaj that, you know, we have to be very careful naming Krishna, because naming your son, because Kamsa is watching and listening. Anything can happen. And if he finds out that you have a son, he may decide to come and find him and kill him. It's an interesting chapter, because it connects that point between Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj. Something that I had actually long forgotten, but it was interesting just to read earlier in the chapter that Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj were both related. And it's interesting how Prabhupada states that they both had the same forefathers. And I'm not sure if it's the first generation or a couple of generations up, but one decided to marry a Kshatriya wife, and he became a Kshatriya, and the other decided to marry a Vaishya wife, and he was the Vaishya. And it reminded me of a lecture that Prabhupada was giving about King Rishabhdev. King Rishabhdev had 100 sons. And of those 100 sons, there were 9 of them who became sannyasis. They were the Navayugendras. And a number of them became Kshatriyas, a number of them became Brahmanas, and others had other roles. So it's very interesting that even though they were so close, one was trained to become a Vaishya and the other one trained to be a Kshatriya, and they were inclined in that way. And they were both connected with Krishna. They were both blessed and had Krishna as their son. So Vasudeva and Devaki came previously. Who did they come previously as? Sutapa and Prishni. And who did Nanda Maharaj and Jasoda Mata come as? Drona and Dara. That's right, Drona and Dara. So now it's interesting. Vasudev and Devaki had previously had a relationship with Krishna, and they have taken birth, and they're born as the parents of Krishna. And Jasoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj have also taken birth and are parents of Krishna. And they have different rasas. Each of them have different rasas with Krishna. Vasudev and Devaki is more in that Kshatriya mode. And with Nanda Maharaj and Jasoda Devi, it's in the in the Vaishya road. So Krishna's the cowherd boy, but he's also the warrior, the fighter who fights on the battlefield is servant to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So it's interesting to see that. And both Vasudeva and Devaki have a loving relationship with Krishna, and Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj have a very loving relationship with Krishna. And Krishna, with each one of them, has with sandalwood, you rub it to get a paste, and the aroma starts to come. Krishna was having different pastimes with them and acting different pastimes, which intensified, brought about an aroma, a very sweet relationship with each one of them. And with Vasudeva and Devaki, it was this whole, just place yourself at that time. Vasudeva was well known. Devaki was from the family of Kamsa. They were a very aristocratic family. And, they were about to have this one, they were about to have the first child. And, suddenly this prophecy comes that, one of these children is going to kill King Kamsa. So suddenly, there's this whole intensity which develops this relationship of they're in fear of what will happen to their children, and in that fear, it just intensifies the situation. It's like a drama, and it really intensifies the situation. The first child comes, and the first child's taken. They're put into prison. The first child's taken, thrown in, killed. So the second child comes, killed again. And so, imagine the number of, this happens. It doesn't happen overnight. It happens over a number of years, and the intensity increases. And they know there's a foretelling that one of these children is going to be killing his uncle Kamsa. So finally, Krishna appears in Mathura to Nanda Maharaj and Devaki in the form he appears in. And imagine the relief, but not only the relief, the attachment, the intensity of the relationship, the sweetness of Krishna appearing. And then, not because he appears, now they're thinking, now what's going to happen? Is he going to be pulled away from us? And is he going to be also killed like the rest of our children? So it's a very intense situation, but in that intensity there's a sweetness also, that affection and devotion that Vasudeva and Devaki have for Krishna is very, it becomes like glue. It's a very strong attachment develops there. And actually, it's not just from that life that already exists, and it manifests again in this particular drama that's being enacted. And similarly, so this child Krishna is taken away. He's taken away then to Nanda Maharaj and Jasoda Mata, and suddenly here comes Garga Muni to tell Nanda Maharaj about his son, and he drops a few clues and says, just beware. There may be something. There's this issue happening with Kamsa and Vasudeva, and there was this son suddenly, this boy suddenly disappeared. Kamsa may think that it's your son, and he may come and want to steal that son. So he's dropping a few clues that, something may happen here. And there's something interesting he says, and Prabhupada mentioned this in yesterday's purport. He says that, but you must always remember, this is Garga Muni speaking, that you must always remember that whenever you want to do something very good, there'll be many hindrances. So he's almost dropping a clue that actually, whatever you're trying to do, there'll be many challenges which will come along. And this boy Krishna, he's a special boy, and he was saying yesterday that he's good as Narayan, and he's a very special person, so you look after him, but just beware. Whenever you're trying to do something very nice, you may face many hindrances. So, yes, we know, all these hindrances come. So the first one comes, Putana comes, tries to snatch Krishna. And already, Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj start to feel a sense of, we have to protect our boy. Someone's coming to kill him. Someone's going to steal him. And then the next demon comes, and then another demon comes, and another demon comes. So at each stage, as Krishna goes through these different, as he starts to grow up, these demons come along. And the relationship between the parents of Krishna and Krishna, both Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, starts to intensify more and more and more. And it again, Krishna's sort of making it sweeter. Because when there's a challenge about, when there's some difficulty, it brings people together. It creates an intensity. So it's often said that although Nanda Maharaj had great devotion and affection for Krishna, Mother Yashoda had even greater devotion and affection for Krishna. She was the pinnacle of Vatsalya Ras. You know, she had that love and devotion in such a way. So any little thing, everything was fine, she was totally happy, everybody was happy. But as soon as some little thing happened, suddenly those heartstrings were pulled. And, you know, she was brought closer and closer. And her, you know, it's you know, she was almost obsessed with Krishna. And it's very interesting because, remember, Krishna's growing up on one side, Vasudeva and Devaki are somewhere else, and they're still in prison. And so they're thinking, what's going to happen? If we relate in today's terms, you know, a child is kidnapped, and the parents are thinking, what's happened to my child? And that for years, they don't know what's exactly happening. Or if somebody is about to try and do something something bad to their child, the meditation is focused on, you know, how to protect that child, what they can do. And sometimes you feel totally helpless. It's beyond you. You can't do anything, but you're in anxiety. So Devaki and Vasudev were in constant anxiety about Krishna as he was growing up, because they were out of reach, he was out of reach. They knew he was in the care of Nanda Maharaj, who would look after him. But still, the anxiety doesn't go away, because these were demons. So you didn't know how they would act. And Kamsa was not, he was unpredictable. He was just so obsessive and angry, he was unpredictable. And similarly, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, they also had this relationship with Krishna. And as each so-called catastrophe happened, each demon came, it was another big challenge. And so it was very frightening. You didn't know what you could do, and it was beyond their control also. You know, they were just simple cowherd folk, even though, you know, it was King Nanda, he was a king. But he had a certain jurisdiction, he had a certain ability within which he could protect. So this intensity increases. We often read the Bhagavatam, we often, you know, talk about the relationship that the gopis had with Krishna. But here we're looking at the relationship that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda had, the parents of Krishna had. And there was also a certain sweetness there, there was a certain intensity there. So I wanted to veer our conversation in a particular direction. And there's something very interesting that Lord Chaitanya explains about this, or instructs us as sadhakas on the path of devotion. And he says, Lord Chaitanya says, and this is a discussion that he was having with Sanatana Goswami. He said, if one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan out of such transcendental covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or reasonings of Shastra. That is the way of spontaneous love. If one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan out of such transcendental covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or reasonings of Shastra. That is the way of spontaneous devotion. So we're sadhakas. We do our regular devotional service every day. But Lord Chaitanya is saying here that we should strive to develop great devotion and affection for Krishna, just as those residents of Vrindavan. We should try and follow in their footsteps. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, he says, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a devotee is attracted by the service of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, namely the cowherd men, Maharaj Nanda, Mother Yashoda, Radharani, the gopis, and the cows and calves. An advanced devotee is attracted by the service rendered by an eternal servitor of the Lord. This attraction is called spontaneous attraction. Technically, it is called Swarup Upalabdhi. This stage is not achieved in the beginning. In the beginning, one has to render service strictly according to the regulative principles set forth by the revealed scriptures and the spiritual master. By continuously rendering service through the process of Vaidhi Bhakti, one's natural inclination is gradually awakened. That is called spontaneous attraction or Ragunuga Bhakti. So, we're on the path of Vaidhi Bhakti. We do our regular chanting, we do our regular service, we come in for the deity, we offer prayers, we offer service. But why are we doing that? Well, we're being instructed that we should be doing that in the mood so that we can cultivate it in a way that we can, in the long term, be attracted to follow the example of, or follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. That's what we're striving to do. There's a very, and sometimes we think, well, you know, I'm chanting every day, and, you know, I do my japa every day, and some days are good and some days are bad, and it's, you know, it's like this. You know, my mind goes like this, my chanting goes like this, everything goes like this. And I think, God, what am I supposed to be doing? But we have to take solace, and we have to be a little patient. There's a very nice, another nice little instruction that Prabhupada gives us. I just read this recently, and I was really inspired by it. And it was this, that this is again Lord Chaitanya instructing Sanatana Goswami. He says, those who have not attained the platform of spontaneous attachment in devotional service render devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, according to the regulative principles mentioned in the revealed scriptures. According to revealed scriptures, this kind of devotional service is called Vaidhi Bhakti. So in the Prabhupada, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, one has to render such service out of love only, ahoituki apriti. Devotional service must be without ulterior motives. The material conditions cannot check. Then material conditions cannot check. Gradually, one can rise to the platform of spontaneous loving service. So he gives this nice example. A child is sent to school by force to receive an education. Now, I can relate to this because my son's 13 now and my daughter's 10. So those of you who have children, you'll relate to this. A number of you here don't have children. But cast your mind back to when you were, you know, 8 or 10 or whatever it was. He says, a child is sent to school by force to receive an education. But when he gets a little taste of that education at an advanced age, he automatically participates and becomes a learned scholar. So one cannot force a person to become a scholar, but sometimes force is used in the beginning. So just sometimes we may have to force our child to go to school in the beginning, even though he or she doesn't want to go. Okay, finally they get over it and they go. At a certain point, something happens and they get a taste, whether it's for one subject or another subject. Or let's just say they go through their schooling, but at a certain point they get a taste for doing something. So Prabhupada says here, and I like this very much, I really relate to it. He says, one cannot force a person to become a scholar, but sometimes force has to be used in the beginning. So it's not that we continue forcing and beating a child, you know, again and again. You have to give them a nudge, and then they walk. And then you have to just do a little fanning, and at some point it'll catch fire. They'll get inspired, and they'll take to it. So a child is forced to go to school and read and write according to the instructions of the teachers. Such is the difference between Vaidhi Bhakti and spontaneous Bhakti. So in the beginning, we have to force. We have to get up in the morning. We have to chant our rounds. We have to do whatever we have to do. And at a certain point, we get a taste. And then we get inspired. We do a little bit more. Dormant love for Krishna exists in everyone's heart. And it simply has to be awakened by the regulative process of devotional service. One has to learn to use a typewriter by following the regulative principles of typing a book. One has to place his fingers on the keys in such a way and practice. But when one becomes adept, he can type swiftly and correctly without even looking at the keys. Similarly, one has to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service as they're set down by the spiritual master. Then one can come to the point of spontaneous, loving service. This love is already there within the heart of everyone. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. So, interesting, isn't it? I mean, we all know it. We've all read these things before. But occasionally we need to be reminded that when we're going like this, whether it's our mind, whether it's our chanting, that we just keep doing it. And then at a certain point, it'll catch fire. I remember many years ago, living in the ashram here, I caught a disease. And that disease was a disease called complacency. I was here in Krishna's temple, upstairs in the ashram, in front of the deities every day, but I caught a disease called complacency. Every day. It took me 4 years. It took me 4 years to kick myself out of it. And it wasn't easy. It took some effort. So we have to reflect a little bit, and we may have to ask ourselves, do I have a disease? Is there a challenge that I'm facing? What is it that I'm doing right? What is it that I'm doing wrong? But one has to persevere. One has to persevere. And what helps us to persevere? Krishna gives us glimpses of taste, sweetness. Whether we're out on the street, the warrior on the street, or whether it's in front of the deities, or whether it's cutting the vegetables. Some way Krishna gives us a little sweetness. And that gives us it's like a carrot. That's a carrot for us, and we go forward. But we have to keep doing it until it becomes a natural thing. So let's go back to what Lord Chaitanya speaks to Sanatana Goswami about a little later on. He says, I'll just read a few verses because I think they're very inspiring and they're very instructive for us. When one becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his natural inclination to love is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. That is called transcendental attachment and devotional service. According to that attachment is called raga mitka, or spontaneous devotional service. The primary characteristic of spontaneous love is deep attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Absorption in thoughts of him is a marginal characteristic. Thus, devotional service, which consists of raga, deep attachment, is called raga mitka bhakti, spontaneous loving service. If a devotee desires such a position, covets such a position, he's considered to be most fortunate. If one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan out of such transcendental desire covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or the reasonings of Shastra. That is the way of devotion, spontaneous devotion. So what Lord Chaitanya is indicating here is that, and as we're reading, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi, Yashoda Mata, have that devotion. They have that intense affection and devotion for Krishna. It's just natural. They don't even have to try. So as sadhakas, as practitioners, Vaidhi Bhakti, we just need to find a way to catch hold of their cloak or their saris and just try and get follow in their footsteps and get that taste. And by doing that, we'll rise to the next platform, and we'll rise above the sleepiness, which sometimes yesterday I was on the motorway driving, and it was fog, and the fog was very thick and heavy, and it was just sitting like. And when there's a fog and you're driving on the motorway and it's very thick, it's very oppressive. And it's like there's a burden on you, and you have to really be sharp, otherwise there could be an accident straight away. In fact, there was an accident. I passed a car which had turned upside down, on my journey. So there can be an accident, and it's like that in devotion. I'm living in the ashram here, or I'm practicing devotional service, but sometimes the modes are very oppressive. They sit on us, and they're very. It's very difficult to remain sharp, and we have to concentrate. It requires us to be very It requires two things. It requires us to be really determined. Yes, we talk about determination all the time. Yes, tell me to be determined. I can't be determined. It's hard work. But actually what helps us is that we have to have an intense desire. We have to want something. We have to want. I remember many years ago, on a course I went to in Vrindavan, Guru Raj Swami gave a really nice course on the nectar of devotion. And he said, you have to have this eagerness. What's the word for eagerness? No, that's enthusiasm. Lol, yeah, but there's another word. Begins with A, I forgot what it is now. Anyway, it'll come. He said, your desire has to be so intense. He said that if a devotee has got a rasgula, and he's picked his rasgula from there, and he comes over there, and he's paying his obeisances, your desire is so strong that if you want that rasgula, you just have to steal it. You know, you have such an intense desire for the sweetness of the rasgula, you'll do anything. You'll steal anything. So we have to have that sort of intensity to want to make a difference. But it's difficult sometimes. It's difficult to be able to have that spirit all the time. So if we're not in that school, if we're not in the school of having that intense desire, there is another path, actually. And I'm going to go back to this thing which Garga Muni hints, gives a clue to, Nanda Maharaj. He says that, but you must always remember that whenever you want to do something very good, there will be many hindrances. And what he's saying is that as devotees, there will be difficulties. There will be hindrances. Now, a number of you will go out today on the street and you'll have hindrances. You know, not everybody is going to do what you'd like them to do. Some of you will go into the pot room and wash pots and there'll be hindrances because the mind will say, I don't want to do this, but you've got to do it. Some of you in the email world out there will have to go to work soon and you'll be doing something and you won't want to, you know, it won't go smoothly. So there'll be hindrances, there'll be challenges. And as devotees, we face challenges all the time. So what's the lesson that we can learn from challenges? What's the lesson that we can learn from challenges and hindrances that we face? Yes. Okay, so Chaitanya Jivan is going to flip them on their head and turn them into opportunities. But how do you deal with it? You know, what does it take to flip something on its head? And I'm there out on the street and somebody's just said, go away. Or they spit at me or do something silly at me. What do I do? Sorry, I'm going to ask you to hold. Yes. You push on, you carry on. So we push on, we persevere. What else can we do? Cultivate tolerance and patience. We talk about it every day. We offer prayers every day. So that's something to be done also. Yes, so those are the things. Yes. So we do our best. We don't have any expectations of whatever's thrown in our face, whatever's thrown at us, whatever challenges are thrown at us. Sure, that's very important. What else could we do? Is there anything else we could do? Okay, I'm going to be tolerant. I'm going to flip my, you know, make something into an opportunity. I'm going to be, you know, perseverant. I'm just going to, you know, get on with it. But what's the result? What's the result? Where will that get you? Will that get you anywhere? So Yes, if we don't, you know, we depend on Krishna, and that our vulnerability becomes our strength. That's one aspect. Yes, so that could there could be some benefit there. Anything else? Well, certainly that becomes revealed where we are with our faith and our relationship with Krishna. We discover that for sure. That's true. A few verses earlier, Garga Muni said to Krishna, I think it's in text 13. He said in text number 16, he says, "To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokul, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace you will surpass all difficulties." So, yes, on one side we embrace those difficulties, those challenges. We don't let them. We don't see the glass half empty. We see it as half full. You know, we look at the positive side, and okay, let it come. Krishna, throw at me whatever you want to throw at me. Let whatever needs to come, come. And we embrace those difficulties. And we remember Krishna. And we pray to Krishna. And Krishna, here, Garga Muni says that through focusing on Krishna, through protecting Krishna, through connecting with Krishna, Krishna will help you surpass all difficulties. And sometimes he tests us. He'll see how far, what's our limit, what's the threshold we'll get to. We've got a few minutes. Let's look at a few examples. And sometimes we have to look at our heroes within the devotional culture. Who are the great luminaries who surpassed all difficulties by depending on Krishna? Who are the big ones? Sorry? The Pandavas. Actually, I was thinking of the Pandavas also. The Pandavas were classic examples, weren't they? Ambarish. I'm going to focus on the Pandavas for a second, because I think after reading the Mahabharata a few times, I always relate to the pain and the challenges, you know, that they were facing it constantly. And just like with Krishna had Kamsa, the Pandavas had Duryodhana and his brothers and Dhritarashtra. So there's always this tension going, and it was painful. But one calamity after another calamity after another calamity after another calamity, but they never gave up faith in Krishna. And in the end, this, you know, just by remembering Krishna, they felt relief. They felt, you know, so each one of them was tested. Arjuna on the battlefield, Yudhisthira at a number of points with the decisions he had to make, Draupadi with the disrobing, and they all turned to Krishna. So that's wonderful examples for us to look. And yes, they tolerated till that point came. They tolerated the madness of the world around them, but Krishna was always their solace. But they had no expectations either from Krishna. They had no expectations of Krishna. They just did what they were supposed to do. Ambarish Maharaj, he also gave himself an all, and his move was always to please the Vaishnavas, to please others, and you know his meditation was always there, the nine limbs of devotional service, constantly practicing those things. No expectation, and then when trouble came, he just continued praying, and Krishna took away all those difficulties. Who else? Prahlad. So Prahlad was a great example. I mean, speaks for himself, you know, a great transcendentalist. Let's come a little bit closer to home. Okay, who's the next person around us who faced those challenges? Prabhupada. Prabhupada faced incredible challenges. And, you know, sometimes when we're in great difficulty, we just should pick up a Prabhupada Leela and we should read about struggling alone, that chapter, struggling alone. It just gives so much inspiration and strength. If we're struggling and we read that chapter, it will give us great strength and inspiration to be able to overcome any difficulties. Let's get down to the likes of you and I. Who are those people who really face challenges? Contemporaries and contemporary devotees. Who's faced real challenges? Yes. N- Tribhuvanath. Tribhuvanath is a good example. Actually, I was just seeing this video the other day, and he would go into places where nobody would go, and you know, all sorts of challenging situations. Sometimes, you know, in a very life-threatening way. But he had this attitude of, you know, Krishna will sort it out. You know, Krishna's in charge, and I'm just out preaching. So he has that nice spirit of going out there fighting. He was always the warrior spirit. I thought of also these devotees in Russia. Recently I read an article about Russia and the problems Russia has, and I remembered the devotees who were in prison, and they had to make, out of dry bread, they were making these beads. I mean, you know, some of the intensity that they faced. And so if we're struggling, that's another good place to read. Read about devotees who are struggling. And not about just devotees in the past, but devotees of the day who struggled. And by reading about those devotees, we again, we'll see how Krishna manifests his mercy. So when challenges come, it's good sometimes. It's good to embrace them. It's good just to take them head on. And if we're still struggling and we're not able to see through the fog of the challenges which are facing us, pick up, you know, something of somebody else, a Vaishnava who is struggling, and what they did and how they dealt with the situation, and that will give us great strength. And what that will do also is we will not only receive Krishna's blessing, we'll receive a little bit more taste, and it will bring us one step closer towards following those devotees who are the residents of Vrindavan. So when I think of this situation, sometimes I think of Prabhupada. Prabhupada's the perfect example of a person who was following in the footsteps of the Brijbasis. And if I can't get myself to think on that level, I'll just follow that gentleman there, because he's got it worked out, and we can relate to him and what he's done. So my sole meditation becomes how to please him and how to please his mission and how to fulfill his mission, and in that way, we're able to, you will receive countless blessings, not just from Krishna, but from other Vaishnavas of the past. So, arm yourself. Nanda Maharaj was very fortunate. He received great blessings. He had this boy called Krishna, and they received many challenges. And similarly, we, in our setting, in today's world, in the mad world we live in today, there are many challenges. If we have a similar spirit, we follow in the footsteps of similar Vaishnavas and Acharyas, and we fulfill the desire of our spiritual masters, then we too will be armed with that right weapon. We'll be successful, and the blessings will come. And that fog will be dissipated, and we will be able to see clearly. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.